Okay, so I'll call the meeting to order. Ken, what else do I do?
So, the first item on our agenda is from, thank you, Valerie printed out a copy of the agenda. Oh, you took one from the front.
But we don't have to say the Pledge Allegiance or anything like that. That's what I was.
You can if you'd like.
It's not on the agenda.
But it's not on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, it does help if you just mention for the recording, because the recording minute secretary isn't here, if you say who is here.
Okay.
Yes, we should do that.
In attendance is Janet Welsh, Vice Chair, Alyssa Van Langefeld, City Council Member, Rachel Butterfield, Committee Member, and Valerie Walton, Committee Member, and Ken Latham, City Manager, and Wendy Page.
Linda Horrocks.
Linda Horrocks, okay, I was looking at.
And Wendy Page is also here.
And Wendy Page, who will be departing. So our first item is, we have Jess Bigler here from Davis County Behavioral Health to give us an update on the Communities That Care program that is available to us. It's a newer program, one that we've never offered. So I invited her to come and give a presentation to us to get the board, to get the committee's ideas on whether we would like to host something like this.
That works, right? Just to leave it on. Okay. Thank you, Janet, for the invitation to come back. I was trying to think of the last time I was here, and I think it was right before Liberty Fest, maybe. So our coalition was present at Liberty Fest. They had a great time talking with the public about a workshop coming up here at City Hall. And then they were also at Night Out Against Crime. They wanted to go and share more about the classes that we are helping to support here in South Davis. That was at the invitation of Chief Craig Black, as well as this committee. Craig wanted us out there to tell more about the signage that was recently installed at Legacy Foxborough Park. So if you haven't been down there, if you didn't get a go for a night out, or you didn't get a glance over at the splash pads, you'll be able to see some parents empowered messaging out there, which is really exciting. So a couple of things I was just going to update on. First of all, so we were going to hold this workshop here at City Hall just a couple weeks ago, but due to low registration numbers, hi, Corey. We postponed rather than cancel. We said, can we just postpone? And the city so graciously moved around our reservation. And so it's actually going to be this Thursday. And I'm excited to tell you we have enough people to hold it now. I do know the Davis Journal is busy as well. Becky Genos, one of their reporters, is on our coalition, and she's out telling people about it as well. So I'm actually expecting more people than those who have registered. So we're really excited about that. We did get your Circle of Security parenting class scheduled for the October 11th one, and we'll be in touch with all the details, but we are having people start to register. So I brought flyers. This one's kind of generic. It's just about the program, and when people go to the registration page, they'll see all the options of when and where that's available, including the one here. And I brought the last of what we've printed of these. If you have last minute people you want to share them with before Thursday night, we would love to have whoever. The more the merrier at this point. They sure can. Yeah. It's easier. Yeah. They can just drop in. Yep. If they register, it's helpful because we do send them a reminder email that day. They can fill out a little pre-survey, just some logistical things. But they're absolutely welcome to drop in. That's completely fine. Okay, trying to think of what else. Okay, I'm just going to move to the one, Janet, that we had talked about. So these are the coalition-supported programs. They're what they have voted in, what they have tasted, what they really support that really match the needs of our kids and families here. When Janet asked us to come out and have a booth, either representing Davis Behavioral Health or the coalition, we sent the coalition But what I wanted to talk about was something she requested. She had said, at the booth, could you have information for how parents can know how to recognize if their child is depressed, how they might have a conversation about suicide, how to deal with bullying, dealing with addiction, that type of thing. So rather than scramble and grab a bunch of resources that you just hope people read, I asked her if you all might have interest in, I know it's one more program, but I really believe in a lot of these programs, and if we get more people through them, there are good things that can come from that. So I offered her something that we actually don't teach all that regularly in Davis County anymore. We used to teach it a lot. Thousands of people went through it just a couple of years ago with a grant that USU Extension had, but now it's mostly just offered through Davis School District for their staff and teachers to take. But I'm wondering how you'd feel about opening a community class. And the class is called Youth Mental Health First Aid. It's an evidence-based international program. It's 6.5 hours, which is a significant amount of time, but it can be split into 2 weeks. So you could do 3-ish hours, 2 Wednesday nights in a row, hypothetically. And it's for adults to learn how to recognize the signs and symptoms of mental health problems in the kids in their lives and what to do about it. So it teaches you what to do on an everyday situation if you're concerned about the kids in your life having anxiety, depression, anything like that. And the second part really dives into how to apply that in a crisis situation. So if your child's self-harming or thinking about suicide or having panic attacks, what do we do? I think it's a really neat program. I think a lot of times we recognize something's going on with the kids in our lives, but we don't know quite what it is, and we don't know what to do about it. So anyways, that was what we talked about. The newest curriculum that they've updated isn't 8 hours, it's down to 6.5, and it adds the components with substance use, bullying. Of course, it has that kind of suicide prevention part in there where you gain some skills on how to talk to your kids about thoughts of suicide or the kids in your life. I should generalize, it can be for a lot of people, and really leaves you with the skills of knowing what to do. So that's what we thought. Rather than try and open one really quickly right before Night Out Against Crime, Janet had a great idea about what about just kind of tossing it out to the public and seeing how many say they'd be interested in this. So we had it at our booth, and 14 people that stopped by filled out our form saying they would be interested in taking the class. That's one night at Night Out Against Crime. And it was really interesting to watch their faces as we explained what this class could do, right, and what you could learn. So that's that. Again, there's no pressure. This would be kind of separate than Communities That Care work, because I'm a certified trainer in it and would be happy to teach it. I could do it under the umbrella of my Davis Behavioral Health role, but it would be separate than Communities That Care. I may invite coalition members to attend as well, right? But we already have manuals. That's something I've had left over from when we used to run this a lot more often. So it would be relatively no cost that I can think of right now associated with it. So I think that's everything. If you just want to host like all the things that we have to offer, it's been nice working with you.
I just got an email like last Friday of the stake president here in North Salt Lake right here, asking if I knew of anything for parents to attend. Unfortunately, they just had another kid commit suicide just a couple weeks. And so he, just knowing me from before, reached out to me, and I would be surprised if, I mean, I need that information. Let's see if we can do it, because he specifically asked, what can I get parents or get someone to do something and do some presentation?
Can I ask which stake president it was?
North Salt Lake Stake. It was Taylor.
Okay. Interesting, because I'm like, we're going to go teach this at a stake in this side of North Salt Lake and a church ward over there in the next couple of months, this like hour and a half one.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I think there's a place for it. Interesting timing on your email. Yeah.
And I'll just say, I'm appreciative of having this too. I have employees who are parents who probably would be interested in taking this class that have teenagers and young children.
Yeah.
So.
I think the biggest challenge is just getting the word out enough, you know. And I think we can do more work on, we need to brainstorm on how to get the word out on some of this stuff.
This one's kind of touchy because it's also one where you don't want to offend too many people because it's pretty fresh. You know,
yeah.
And that's kind of what he was saying. I don't want to like come out and say, okay, now everyone go do this.
No, you don't. Yeah.
But also he was needing to do something. And I think one way that I've noticed when we kind of do things that I've done at work is we have to have people come and say that they're coming, that, I mean, like the committee come, maybe even the mayor come, like it's something that is important, and then other people will come, because sometimes people think, oh, I just have to come because my kid's struggling, and that's not it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just because your kid's fine right now doesn't mean it's going to be fine in 2 months.
Yeah.
Well, and I think if we get the word out to the stake presidents and bishops in the town, as well as other clergy members, that would be a good way to, because they will know what families really could benefit most and can, you know, can help funnel them.
And I would say invite them too. I mean, the more people we get that are influential, that show up, it's
better. I think your comment on timing is wise. Usually you do want to leave a period of time between a loss before we come in and start doing prevention, especially suicide loss. It's a really unique kind of grief. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I would think we don't do it yet, perhaps, but give it some breathing room for just a minute. It's usually the moment people feel ready to come in and do prevention. Oh, we should have come in and known more about what to look for, how to help. But, I mean, I think the average time they say is about 6 to 9 months before you come in and do prevention.
Yeah.
Right now, at least in that community, and maybe your community at large, it's more of what we'd consider postvention efforts, where now it's some time for healing and some time with that. So
he mentioned there's, and maybe you know about this, but in the end of September sometime, there's like an emergency preparedness thing for Davis County at somewhere. I can't remember what it's at. But he said, hey, do you think we could throw something together, not just, you know, earthquake type stuff, like more mental health, like a booth there? And so I was meaning to talk to you, so
yeah,
I'll call you.
Okay. I was going to say, this is something I would consider emergency preparedness.
Yeah.
You know.
Are you guys involved in the September 17th?
Is that when it is?
Yeah.
Not this year. The last time I did something there was with Centerville Cares back in the day.
Yeah, this one will be in Centerville. The location's in Centerville, but
is it Megaplex again?
South, it's in, and it's all of South Davis County.
Yeah, okay.
Is it possible for us to add this youth mental health first aid into the rotation of the courses that we offer?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would love, as a committee, if we embrace these three courses and then we set a calendar out through the year that we do each of them maybe twice through the year, and it's just we can plan and budget way out. I appreciate your comment about giving some time for different communities to grieve. But I will say that we have some distance in our city, and the youth mental health for the youth first aid could work in Foxborough right now that doesn't maybe feel the immediacy of that. What was the age of the individual, do you know?
16.
Okay, so high school level. So that would be probably, do you know if it was Woods Cross or Bountiful High?
It was Woods Cross.
The high school kids from Foxborough actually go to Bountiful High, so it wouldn't feel quite as immediate.
Yeah, I think he was going to be a senior this year, so 16, 17.
Yeah, that's awful.
So
I love the program, and I would fully endorse it. I recommend our committee do that as well, and we might be able to do it one session in a specific location earlier than that 6 to 9 month period.
Mm-hmm. So what's the class limit size?
To keep it effective, I would think 30.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think with the school district, we've taught about 30, and it works well.
So my question was really about the school district. Is it possible, or is it not the right vehicle to get the word out through schools? I mean, can you go through?
You could, yeah.
Can you notify parents somehow through the schools?
Yeah, and we'd be able to send it out through Peach Jar, like we do that electronic kind of one.
Electronically.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about the educators as well. You said that you've mostly done this workshop for teachers?
Lately, yeah. Back in the day, I'm trying to think of when that was, 2016, 2017, USU Extension housed a grant where we were getting everybody in the county sent through it. When the grant funding ended, there became less of a presence of it yet. There's a few of us who have maintained our certifications over the years. But yeah, the last several years, what I've offered mostly is through the school district. In fact, I was at Woods Cross High
last
spring.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's been, so this, the teachers in our local schools, will they have recently done this training?
When Christy Blankman, she's their prevention coordinator for the district, when she opens it up, it's open to all of Davis School District.
So it doesn't mean that the teachers here may have...
No, Bountiful and Woods Cross High and Viewmont High were invited to that one in the spring, so I think a lot of them got it, but that also means maybe those folks went back and shared word of mouth, and maybe there is interest for them as well, you know?
That might be an interesting avenue for us to take on this first session, is that we, as the city, want to provide this training to our local educators. And we go to like Orchard and Foxborough and maybe the charter schools and say, hey, the city is running this. It's really valuable. You're teaching our kids. We would love your faculty to come. We'll have dinner or whatever we decide to do. That might be it. And I think we could fill up 30.
Yeah, I think that in way. That one, though, you'd want to work with the district because they get professional development and they have to do it. So she kind of coordinates theirs and she'll be offering them again this year. So
that same class.
Mm-hmm. So again, if she's kind of taken that portion, who else could we reach? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, I think, Corey, you have a stake president that reached out to you specifically. What can we do? So I wonder if this first session, he's invited, and maybe he may have some select leadership people in the wards or stake. Because then once they take it, then when it's ready to be rolled out broader, that he can then help say, look, we did this and it was really valuable. And then we can also target contacting clergy throughout the Foxborough area, because they'll want to attend, or they will have families that they know could benefit. Mm-hmm. And then the next session, roll it out to the east side.
What would be a time frame that we could offer that class?
Like how soon?
Yeah.
So you've got this one coming in October. This is August, and this is October.
And then December is really not
the
good
best
option for that.
And then
so
I
maybe
think we
January?
Did your spring one in. I think we did your spring one of this in March.
So it's already planned for
we've scheduled
year.
Yeah, oh, we've fantastic. Scheduled one for October, or it was February or March, I can't remember off the top of my head, but
that's great.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of good things already.
And then the resilience one, is that on the calendar right now
for this Thursday, but beyond that? No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe January would be the first time
for this. Could, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that gives you a lot of time to spread the word. And I'm happy to send you this so you have your talking points of sorts. And we can just keep having more and more funnel into that form to let us know they're interested. Unless you want to pick dates, then we could turn this into an actual flyer with the dates. It's just way far out there to start promoting for something in January. So up to you. I'm happy to do either way.
The rest of the committee, what do you think about that for January?
Yeah. I agree.
And I think if we're saying January, we might as well just pick a date, because it makes it easier if we're handing out flyers if they've got a date on them. I know it's...
I don't know. Are you
away.
Capable of committing to dates that far out?
We could. I think so.
Do you want to look at what is available and then maybe let us know? Because I don't think...
Why don't we work on a date? Yeah. If we want to put something on the calendar in January, why don't you go look at your calendar? We'll look at ours.
Yeah. Do you want it in the 6.5 hour block, or do you want to do 2 kind of 3 hour
segments?
What do
you think is more successful for your students? Is it better to do it twice, or?
I think the two is more accessible for people. Yeah. You know, right. I'm thinking as a mom, I could maybe give you sure. two evenings if I knew them rather than block out a whole like Saturday per
se. That was my first reaction was two classes on 2 weeknights in a row.
Two weeks in a row.
Uh-huh.
And do you get participants that they attend the first one and then they start thinking and then they come to the second one maybe a little bit better prepared to talk about things?
We do. Yeah, people do great. Luckily, the way it's structured is the first day is laying a lot of foundational things, and the second day is when they learn their skills. So I like it because people come back, right? They're like, oh, now I'm interested, and I need to learn what I'm supposed to do. So they'll come back to gain the skills. Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, you're going to lose some people who don't come back the second week, but if we register enough, you still get a lot graduating. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm happy to go look at dates and send them over, and we'll just think about January. And then if you wanted this on a more ongoing thing, we can always plug one of those in somewhere, too. We'll see how this week's goes.
Can you tell us some information about the last Circle of Security workshop?
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, how many people ended up finishing the entire thing? Just some kind of feedback so we know maybe we just want to do Circle of Security instead of going back to that one.
Yeah, so I shared that last time, but we had 12, you're okay. We had 12, we had 15 register and 12 graduate, but those 12 graduates represented all of the families that registered, if that makes sense. So it was like partners that were the three that dropped off. And the feedback was great. It really resonated. That's where two more of these got scheduled as I came and shared some of the anecdotes that had been shared with their instructor. And so it really resonated. It's a really remarkable program. I think lately, I'll just share this, I've been thinking about prevention a lot of times, and we can tell people what to do or we can help them know how to do it. And this class is much more of a how do you do it than a what do you do. Like, you don't teach me a script and I go home and say it to my kids. You help me uncover what's already in there to be a good parent, which sounds kind of hokey until you take the class, but I would encourage you to take it. It's great. It's a really great class. And I think that's better prevention in a lot of ways. We can say, go do this with your family. But until you resolve all the stuff in you that's getting away in the way of you doing that, you can't do it. And it's okay to admit that until we resolve some of it. Mm-hmm. It's neat. And it's neat for parents to do it with each other, to come to a room of people working on it together. There's some of that Me Too that happens that's really helpful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you're welcome. Anything else?
Before you sit down, can you tell us the health and wellness part of the Night Out Against Crime? Can you tell us, in general, did you get a lot of positive feedback from people that you interacted with?
We did.
Did you get much traffic at your table?
Yes, we got a lot of traffic. I should get a count for you. They packed a bunch of goodie bags and gave a bunch of them out that just had prevention materials. These were in both of them. So they got to talk to a lot of people. As far as how many will register for the classes, we don't know yet. We're kind of watching those come in as people actually unpack their bags and see what they got from that night. But yeah, our coalition enjoyed it, and it gave them a lot of practice on how do we talk about what we do. It was really great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for the
invite.
I thought
it was a particularly good mix to have Night Out Against Crime with her group. You know, I just thought that was a great combination. Mm-hmm. We should think about doing that again.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sure I'll be in touch. Well,
thank you.
Thanks so much, Jess, for
your welcome.
Time.
And I should recognize that Corey is now here.
And
yes, I am.
Mary thank Kay you. Porter is on the phone, so she's attending, right? Still.
She was.
She.
Yeah.
Yes.
We can hear the beach waves in the background.
Since
we can hear the beach waves in the background.
Since Corey's now here, I will turn it over to him. You sure?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Next on our agenda is a review of the Health and Wellness Fair that we held in conjunction with the Night Out Against Crime. I have yet to get numbers on how many people showed up at the RV for the health department. I did see people going in and out of the RV, but I don't know how many vaccinations that they delivered or whether they gave out any information about WIC or maternal child health programs that they have. We also had a local dentist and a local physician, both of which just recently in the last year or so opened up practices over by Lee's. And I saw quite a bit of traffic at both of them. And then Jess was there, or Jess's team was there. I think we had really, really good attendance, but I heard from a lot of people that they didn't know it was going on. And I know Detective Everett went through a lot of effort to put up signs and get the word out, but I don't know that people always pay attention to it. And sometimes with Facebook, the algorithm doesn't show up, the events don't show up, like, in a timely way. I posted one and I couldn't even find it on my own feed. It was really strange. So that night I suggested to Ken that the city, if we just decide, or the city decides, Night Out Against Crime is always going to be on a Thursday night, that we have banners. And I know in the past I've seen a banner at the entrance to Foxborough. And if we, if the city determines that every year it's just going to be on the Thursday, you don't have to put a date. You can just have banners printed that say this, next Thursday or whatever, and then put it up the Friday before. But I think that would help get the word out. And if we know that we're always going to do a health and wellness fair in conjunction, then we can either have separate banners put up for that or combine them.
Yeah.
But I think if we have a dozen banners,
I think we'll have more time in advance of the event next time we do it too. And so I think as this gains some popularity, it will get better. But I do think we should advertise more, and I liked your idea of signage. That seems to work, especially signage in advance. Mm-hmm. 10 days in advance for the neighborhood, because we had a lot of Foxborough residents. Uh-huh. I talked to a lot of people who lived in the neighborhood and came over.
Mm-hmm. So awesome. But yeah, I would estimate we probably had at least 200 people, maybe 300.
I would think so.
But there was opportunity, to have more.
Yes. Yes, we could handle a lot more.
Right.
You're right.
People raved about
yeah,
the helicopter and the climbing wall. Mm-hmm. They loved that. So I saw Rachel there. Was anybody else? And Alyssa was there. So it turned out Detective Everett did a wonderful job. Okay, next, our approval of minutes from the June 13th meeting.
Before we move on, can I ask a couple questions about the...
Sure.
Night out. So just so I'm clear, maybe everyone else is clear. It sounds like as a committee, we are choosing Night Out Against Crime to be a health and wellness fair sponsored by this committee moving forward. Is that right? Is that how we're agreeing? Okay. And then it's once per year, Night Out Against Crime. Is that right?
Night Out Against Crime is once a year.
And we want to marry it together and do it again next year with Night Out Against Crime.
Great. Yeah. I think the health and wellness fair has to be held in conjunction with something else.
I agree.
That has high attendance, or else I think we're going to lose momentum.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
One thing we could consider and talk about is there one feature that was available at the health and wellness fair that we think is so valuable, we want to offer it multiple times through the year, like maybe the vaccination clinic, which I think was so cool. I don't think it got a lot of traffic.
I don't think it did either.
But it is a really, really cool resource. We could potentially combine with any of the food truck nights Mondays throughout the spring and just have the vaccine clinic come twice a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. Those are just questions. They're not assignments. But I like the idea that, like, officially we do this event every August with Night Out Against Crime.
Yeah, and I think if we're going to do that, we should do it Somebody else with kids might want to chime in on this, but probably in July, because we have the potential of getting the kids who need vaccinations. And, you know, the lower income families who might have a harder time getting into the doctor's office during the day might find it easier to come in the evening in conjunction with the food truck leak.
I agree with you. I think that's a great idea.
So those of you with kids, is July a better time for...
I would vaccinate my kids before July. I would say June or May, so that people have it in their minds.
The only problem is the Night Out Against Crime nationally is that time in August.
We're not saying move Night Out Against Crime. Or move that. We're saying we want to be with Night Outs Against Crime, do everything the same, and then ask the vaccine clinic to come to a regular regular food truck night.
Yeah,
so separate events. So what I would recommend then is maybe January in our agenda, we have like a calendar item where we firm this up, like which months do we want to do this, or maybe November, I don't know, whatever you want to talk about the calendar as we get moving ahead. It's kind of early to talk about it right now, but great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Hang on, I'm writing this down. Okay, our next agenda item is to review last month's meeting minutes, or June's last meeting minutes. Does anybody have any corrections or comments? I read through it and I didn't see anything.
Do we need to have a formal motion and approval?
That would be good.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we approve meeting minutes from June...
13th.
June 13th, 2022, for the Health and Wellness Committee. And then I need a second.
I'll second it.
And then, Janet, you would call for a vote.
Okay. Can everybody vote?
All in favor?
Aye. All in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
Great.
Any opposed? Okay. And does anyone on the committee have any business that you would like to bring up?
I have a question. This is mostly, I think, for Ken. Do you have any updates on the city's healthy city designation from the Utah League of Cities and Towns? How's that going?
We submitted it on
time,
of course. And, well, not of course, but...
Of course.
Of course.
You own that. You deserve that.
I didn't write it. We have a very talented grant writer in the city who's on our staff, and she put it together. And we did submit it on time, and so... We expect that will be approved. As we looked over the requirements for the application, we comply in every way. We have a strong application. And I think they're not in the business of really turning down applications. So I expect that we'll get approval. And then in September at the League of Cities and Towns annual conference, we should be one of the designated new cities for that program. So I haven't been told that by the league yet, but that's what will happen.
Now, you said it was a grant. What?
It's not a grant. It's a designation.
It's a designation. Okay.
Uh-huh. And so it's, I think it's a really important designation for any community that's trying to do what we're doing, which is to raise awareness and take on some health initiatives such as Communities That Care or Davis Behavioral Health. Some of the things that we're doing are really important. I think a lot of cities engage in physical infrastructure that also is health related. And so as we look at redeveloping Hatch Park, we've looked at ways to benefit the public from a physical health standpoint. So putting in facilities, lots of pickleball, a good trail that has some it has some measurement on it so that people that want to walk a mile can easily measure their mile, you know, that which might not be important to young people who want to go 10 miles, but for people my age who want to measure a mile at a time, it might be a good thing to have.
Just the 1 mile.
Yeah, just you and I are like, just the 1 mile. So I kind of make jokes about that because my wife, she walks every day and she measures her mileage, and it's really important to her. So anyway. But other cities are doing lots of physical improvements, and we're going to move into that as well.
And every day I ride my bike, usually up to Kaysville, and I see kind of what areas have good developed supportive services, and there is a huge amount of traffic on the trail along Legacy. Huge.
Yeah.
There's only a couple of places where there's benches where people could rest, because not everybody, you know, is a diehard exerciser. They want to get out there, but, you know, that might be something to look at as ways to develop that area, because it's getting huge usage.
Yeah, that's really an interesting improvement that is owned. The property is owned by UDOT. They want nothing to do with maintaining it.
Mm-hmm.
And not all the cities have agreed to maintain it. So
obvious.
It takes some regional planning. I was speaking with WFRC today. I was at a transit meeting, and we had a side meeting. Ted Knowlton, who's on our city council, is the executive director. He's the assistant director. I don't know what his he's the number two person at WFRC. We talked amongst ourselves. We had Davis County there about the need to do a regional active transportation plan, which included the Legacy Trail. This came up a little bit, that there's some frustration that the different communities see it in different ways and treat it differently. We haven't done a terrific job in our community, but we need to do better on that. But just if thinking about ways that we could improve our streets to include bike lanes, even physically separated from the travel lanes.
Uh-huh.
A lot of cities are doing shared shoulders with parking in the bike lanes. We've been talking as a staff and as a city about a cross section on Highway 89 that would have a dedicated physically separated bicycle area, because it's really not safe right now. Anyway, those are things. Active transportation is a big part of what we're starting to get into the planning for right now as North Salt Lake.
One thing to point out when you talk about bike lanes as a cyclist, when the cyclist is sharing the parking lane, the cyclist has to swing way out.
Yep.
Because people in a car who are getting out don't look. And I can't tell you how many times I've had a door opened right in front of me.
Yeah, it's just not a safe way to do it.
Yeah, they really need a dedicated lane.
Can we have the other committee members sound in on this? Because this is a topic we've been talking about in City Council, that we would like a review of the city, across the city, to look at bike transportation and where we have areas of weakness. It would be helpful in those conversations to have feedback from this committee to say, these are areas we know are problematic. This is something that is important to us, even if it, you know, the city ends up spending money to create dedicated lanes or things like that. It would be very helpful to have that kind of feedback from this committee if anybody wants to sound in on that.
I can personally attest to it as well. I am a cyclist as well. And I usually drive to where it's safe to start, just because there are so many routes that aren't, or I have to wake up before the crack of dawn to travel those roads. So picking routes very carefully and very wisely, and a lot of our major thoroughways just don't have a shoulder at all. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't stop people from trying to share the road. And so it is a potential for a lot of hazard. And I know UDOT and a lot of people in Salt Lake and the higher-ups in UDOT are trying to invest in bicycle transportation. It's something I am extremely invested in, and so it's something I would support 100%.
Well, and one thing to note, just about two, maybe 3 weeks ago, there was a 50-some-year-old father and his teenage daughter that were hit on Pages Lane around 1050 West Pages Lane. I ride that almost daily, and there is a very wide shoulder with a dedicated bike lane right where they were hit. And so having a dedicated bike lane and a separate shoulder even then isn't enough to keep people safe. I mean, if there's a barrier curb, and I'm not saying you can't do that on every street, but on busy roads, that might be the only thing that is a reasonable kind of barrier to help, or at least rumble strips or something to alert the driver who might be deviating out of their lane. But I think the roads, you know, they're the most highly traveled roads. Redwood, and I've ridden Redwood up over the bridge coming north, and it's a little scary. Redwood, 89, Center Street, 2600 South / 1100 North. Now, of course, the part I'm talking about is really Woods Cross, I believe. How much of it is Woods Cross? How much is...
The city owns the street.
The city owns... this is the weirdest thing I've ever run into. Even though our municipal boundaries are between Woods Cross and North Salt Lake are 1100 North, North Salt Lake accepted jurisdictional and maintenance responsibility for the entire right-of-way.
Okay.
So... Mm-hmm. It's in North Salt Lake's responsibility.
What about the railroad crossing?
Who owns it? Is that what you mean? The railroad, they get to do whatever they want.
Okay.
I mean, what's your question about the railroad?
Because getting over the railroad, that's always a little dicey with the cars.
Yes.
Because it narrows down to
it
the one lane.
It does narrow down.
So is there a chance that we could get the bike lane designated on the right?
Yes. There is that chance. Right now, the both sets of tracks, two things are happening. The westernmost set of tracks,
which is the diciest of the two,
it's probably in the worst condition, and is the narrowest, is going to be widened when the city builds the bridge that will separate. 1100 North will go up and over the main rail line where the Front Runner trains come and the Union Pacific trains come. And so during the course of building the bridge, the plan is also to widen the road at the western, it's called the Woods Cross Industrial Lead Line, and so we would widen the railroad corridor or the street at that location as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be done. But it'll take 2 or 3 years.
Okay. In the interim, though, I mean, it is sort of paved. If they could just do some tweaks to dedicate a space for cyclists, that would be nice. Because I see cyclists riding.
We can try that. Union Pacific is extremely difficult to work with, even for a small change like that.
Okay.
But I'll mention that to them. We're working with them on this project that I just mentioned. So,
I do agree with Janet, though, as far as protected bike lanes on how much they do make an improvement, just instead of just painting a lane itself, but to have a barrier, some type of barrier goes a long way.
And along Legacy, one suggestion for an improvement that might be helpful, particularly for walkers, is there are some benches. It might be helpful to have a few more, but also to have, you know, those like awning things. They're like a triangular
shade structures.
Yeah. Something like that. Because you're out there, you're in the blazing sun. And if you alternate the benches on either side, then they could sit under the one that has the shade, whether it's coming from the west or the east, depending on the time of day. Most people aren't. There's fewer people out in the middle of the day in the blazing sun. It's usually earlier or later.
I would suggest also, I noticed once you hit Bountiful and Center Rail, there's some mechanic stations, you know, with different tools to improve on. It would be nice to have one on the Center Street trailhead. That's a major trailhead that people start from, to have a kit right there.
Right. And at Legacy. I mean, those of us who live right there, you know, we're not usually having a problem. But for those people who are passing through, because the next one is not until Centerville.
There's a big gap. in between.
So what are those? They're
like maintenance stands. So like there's one up at the Wild Rose Trail. Mm-hmm. We have one up there. So it's like a mechanic stand that you can put your bike on. It has a variety of tools that you'd need to make adjustments or repairs.
Yeah, and the tools are attached by a steel cable, so they can't be, you know.
Ken, is the Parks and Arts Committee making recommendations for specific park items like that right now? Is that part of the work they're doing?
I think they could always consider those things. It's in their wheelhouse, sort of, too.
Could you?
I don't know that they're doing anything right now on that, but
I don't think they're probably doing anything on that particular trail. But I remember that when I was working there, but it's been a couple of years now. We were each year saying these are our priorities where we'd like to have some of that money. But you're saying they're not necessarily doing that.
So
right now.
So we have a 25-year plan, 30-year plan that the council has approved. And the Parks Committee made those recommendations to the City Council. And so to the extent that they look at that every year, which I think they do, that would be where this would fall. So every year they should be making a recommendation of the council on improvements.
So that, and I remember we were doing part of that when I was there, and it was really in April that we were kind of saying these are the things we'd like to put in the budget for next
year. But I'll make sure David knows. David Franson, our public works director, has the benefit of this conversation.
Yes, so that was what I was going to say. Could you share the information with that committee that the Health and Wellness Committee has requested some improvements along Legacy, some consideration about bike trails, and that committee will send the recommendations in the parks budget to see where that stuff would come from.
Yes.
Thank you.
And if you want Rachel or I to come to that meeting where it may be discussed to kind of explain what it is we're talking about, because they might not be cycling.
Yeah, that's great.
Ted Knowlton is the city council member that goes to that meeting, and he's a cyclist. And
he'll get it.
And he's a champion of this, definitely.
Yeah.
I also have a random question. Does Legacy get plowed through the winter? It's not maintained during the winter, right?
That's really one of the arguments is who's supposed to plow it, who's supposed to repair it, you know, and the cities have been fighting. I think we've taken on our section for keeping the surface in good condition, but I don't think that North Salt Lake plows either.
Yeah, it would be nice to have it through the winter as people are forced on the road otherwise.
Right. Speaking of the maintenance, the boardwalk south of Center Street on the trail has a lot of, I don't know if they're screw or nail heads sticking up.
Come up.
Okay.
The one south that's in Salt Lake County, I mean, literally they can puncture a tire.
Oh, yeah.
My husband has gator hard shell tires, and it went through. And
you say that's in Salt Lake City or North Salt Lake?
North Salt Lake needs some maintenance.
Okay.
But Salt Lake's does too. North Salt Lake's is the shortest. It's just south of Center Street.
Yeah.
There's a boardwalk there. Has there been, I thought we brought up suggesting a cleanup activity or something, because there's a lot of trash out along the trail, along the fences it tends to catch.
I think that would fall under the Parks and Arts Committee.
Okay.
But you could contact the chair of that department. Her name's Tammy Clayton, thank you. Burningham is her maiden name. And say, hey, I think a cleanup event would be a great idea. Is that something your committee would want to put on an agenda? Or I could come and talk about it.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea. And I think the Public Works has also suggested that in the Parks and Arts Department, committee, I mean. So I think there's already interest in that if you bring that to them.
We do have a day of service on September 10th coming up.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed I was looking at some projects that the city would support if there's a group to do it. And cleanup is we have 8 or 9 cleanup areas, including the trail.
Yeah,
that you're talking about.
Last year, the Legacy Stake took the trail.
Yeah,
and they publicized it, and it was all just meet at one place. And I'm thinking, we're talking about probably at least 3 miles of trail, and I'm thinking they want everybody to just meet at the park and walk 3 miles to the other end to pick up trash and then walk 3 miles home. I was a little surprised at kind of the lack of planning.
Yeah,
you know, the most like, successful you need to drop people off.
Sure.
With tools and whatever.
Yeah. The most successful project last year, which I think was the first year, you know, we had this big push, were the city was contacted by a husband and wife team that had been assigned on behalf of some church groups, and I don't know how many church groups it was, to work with the city on projects. And so that allowed our public works department to put together projects of a reasonable size, for example, mm-hmm. so that people weren't walking for miles. And it was really successful. We had 10 or 11 locations throughout the city where we had public works people helping and supporting projects. It was mostly done by volunteers, but it was sort of organized, and we oversaw some of that so that the scale was correct for the number of people that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was very successful. It kind of wore out our employees a little bit. We ask a lot of them. There are about half the weekends of the year we have events that bring public works staff into town on the weekends. And that's a lot for mm-hmm. our city. And I'm looking at ways of helping to reduce that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It brings our management staff, who really don't get overtime or anything. It brings them into the city about half the weekends of the year, which they're happy to do. But it's a bigger burden. I didn't mean to bring this up in health and wellness, but it can be hard to get city personnel to do those kinds of things. So mm-hmm. we do it once a year, and it's a big push.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we don't do it all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Okay. Anybody else have anything you want to bring up? Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I actually do have something I want to bring up, if that's okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's Valerie.
Thank you. Yeah. So I've been sitting in on these once a month with all of you, and kind of the things I've been hearing are a lot of discussion about outreach, about planning activities, like when they occur, things like that. And it seems like we're sort of working on leaning into... like the next step from activities, kind of strategically thinking about what do we want to be doing in addition to what we're already doing. And connected to that would be evaluation. So I'm wondering if we're maybe at the point in the next couple of meetings where we could sort of think in terms of those buckets and maybe develop, I don't know, some things that some more focused goals to think about for next year and think about planning our agendas out to help us kind of reach those things. I'm not sure if that's
I agree.
Helpful.
No,
it would be, and it's just the way that my brain works, and I can totally step back from that if it's not helpful for the group.
No, I actually, it's funny you said that, because I was thinking today, you know, that this was happening tonight, and I was starting to think, because we've kind of leaned on Jess and all of her stuff, which has been great. I don't want to sound like we're grateful, but I agree, like kind of our own stuff, it's been good, but we do, I think, need to have some of our own goal stuff.
I think it would be great to know if there are specific questions that the council has for this committee. I want to make sure that we're addressing them and thinking about them and kind of timing that right too, and figuring out how to communicate what we're doing back to the council. I mean, some of those things like the communities that care with the class scheduling, I'd love to see a write-up eventually, like a one-pager of, you know, here's our recommendations for the cycle, here's how much we think the budget would be, here's why we think they're working well. I think some of that is really helpful documentation to help. I don't know. I think I'm talking too much.
No, I agree. You're right. Yeah.
I think though the communication with the city council, that's why we have the city council member here.
Yes, definitely. And at every city council meeting, I have an opportunity to give an update about this committee, and I do. So you are being recognized and known in city council. But I would love more direct, specific information. Like, this is what I should take back to city council. So I love your idea. Just a couple of suggestions. This is a new committee, and so it's all kind of up in the air. And Corey, you've got a lot of options on the table. So I'll give a few suggestions, but know that you get to make these decisions the best way you see the committee moving forward. But I know in the Parks and Arts Board, which is one that I was involved with for several years, when I was chair, it runs different and they have different content that they cover, but each committee member had an area of expertise. So we could have the health and wellness fair in the summer. It could be communities that care, and then the write-up from the events or the schedule moving forward. But each of us could have one area that's like, hey, you're the communities that care, you're the health and wellness, you're the bikes, paths and trails, or whatever those assignments are. If you know of those assignments, you can make them. As we're reaching and thinking about our new goals, we might come up with new assignments, and then people could volunteer that will be mine. In my experience, it's been helpful to have those specific delegations rather than everything kind of swirling around on your plate. And when I was the chair, I also felt like I wasn't super clear what is my job here and can I give assignments and can I delegate? And I'll just tell you the answer is yes. You can delegate. You can give assignments to myself included, to all of us. That's what we're here for. So maybe that's an agenda item for next time, is what are those buckets that we want to focus on, and then who will be assigned for that bucket. And then we would each report on that each meeting. And then each January we revisited it and we would move around. Now someone else will take on that if they want, or if someone wants to keep it, they could. But I think that might be, I like that idea, Valerie. One last piece about that. Another thing I did on Parks and Arts is an annual presentation to the city council that they did not ask for. But I went to city council meeting and I said, hey, these are the things we did over the course of the year. Our first goal was the Healthy Cities designation, and check, we have that happened this year. We did this fair. We had about this many people there. We did the circle of security training. We had this many people. So sometime in the December range, putting together a one-page document, like you were saying, that just says, hey, this is the things the Health and Wellness Committee did. And then you could come to city council and say, hey, I just want you guys to see this that we're doing. They know what we're doing, so it's not going to be news, but it's very impressive, and it gives us a chance to really
focus. I think it's nice for us, too, to be able to reflect back on and take some internal credit for what we've done. It's kind of re-energizing.
Well, especially since we're so new.
Yep.
It's only been, 4 months?
Well, yeah, and we have, like I said, leaned on Jess a lot because stuff was already going. So I have felt, that's why I thought today.
I think getting organized and taking a planned approach, I really appreciate Valerie's idea here to sort of plan things a little bit with a little bit more structure. The idea of the buckets and having people have expertise or have assigned areas is a great idea. I just wanted to say, I think every citizen committee should have once a year, the whole committee ought to appear before the city council and give that report. And I'm trying to work that with the golf committee. I think at the end of the golf season, that's always a good report, and our other committees. And so we can work towards that.
Let me add one suggestion, Valerie. It's specific to you, just to consider. One thing I love about your history is your experience with homeless policy. That's not a really relevant problem in North Salt Lake right now, but it has the potential to be in the future. I think that would be a very impressive thing for this committee to just do some thinking about how might we want to manage that in our city before we are in the crisis of needing to manage it. So if that's something you wanted to put some thought into, hey, these are some things I've seen work, especially at this very low level where it's not in crisis management, that would be really valuable to me as a city council member, and I think a valuable part of this committee.
I'll consider that.
So I guess as the chair, maybe I would suggest in our next meeting we walk through kind of a planning exercise, and we can be prepared to kind of talk about the committee's objectives and how you want to divide those things up.
Yeah, I like your suggestion. Everyone have a specialty. I mean, that's the best way to do anything, because I don't cycle at all. I mean, I used to, and I decided it was too long, so I like to run instead. So, I mean, you asked me about the running trails up here. I know them all. But any of the cycling stuff, I have no clue about them.
And I really love the focus as well, like being able to put our minds to something where we've kind of, for months, kind of deciding what we are. But now if we do have some focus, and we can put forth our ideas and bring things to the table based on what our interest, you know, what our expertise are. I love that.
And I'm just going to throw one idea out there, just because I know I'll forget it if I don't say it right now, is that you brought up running, and Rachel and I are cyclists. And I think it'd be really great if the city had just a map that said, that had all of the activities, no matter, you know, whatever it is you like to do, if you're a cyclist, here's some great routes or some great trails. If you're a runner, you know, and they could be superimposed on a map, but just to get it out there, you know, if you want a rollerblade, where can you go? You know,
I think we have one that exists already, a map of the city that shows all the trails.
They do, but what that means is, even if it exists, it's not existing in a space that you're able to find it.
Right.
So
right.
What I would recommend is to just make a list of like, hey, this is what we want to know, and here's where I would find it. Like, maybe it's a page on the city website, maybe it's a Facebook post, whatever would be the place that you would have found it. Mm-hmm. That you can take that feedback back to the city and be like, hey, they already have this. And the trail map's actually very impressive. It's
really, cool.
Really, really cool. But that means it's not getting into the hands of people who want to see it.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Okay. Anybody else?
We may even, I mean, thinking of that, some of our stuff overlaps with the trails committee and things. We may even have to have a meeting with them, overlap some stuff.
I think they'd be happy to do that. I think we might have a guest to introduce. That might be our last thing. Do you want to introduce who you've brought?
Marty Peterson is here, and I think you brought some visitors with you. Marty, do you want to take a second and introduce your folks?
So Marty Peterson. Is that a report? Is that going?
You got to press the button.
I just there see that. Oh, because it's green.
Yeah.
Marty Peterson. I'm currently the volunteer emergency manager here in North Salt Lake. And so we also have a group of individuals who are amateur radio operators. And they are working on, I'll let them talk a moment about it, as long as you want them to talk, because they'll talk all the rest of the night. But they want to make sure that the city can access the internet via radio when all cell phones and internet is down due to a disaster. And so that's what they've been on the roof working on. We have a very nice antenna up there that's starting to get full of all sorts of sophisticated equipment. And they want to add one more piece, and that would allow the city to access the internet in a disaster. But they're also a good resource in other ways. Nicholas sits on the Bountiful Emergency Preparedness Committee. Because North Salt Lake is invited to do that. I used to attend their meetings long ago, many years before COVID hit. Rick, they both have emergency access to the building so that they can help with during emergencies or beat us all here to get communications going for the police chief and the city manager in a disaster. Let me have them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Nick Abel. I've been a resident for over 11 years now. I'm in Foxborough. but yeah, I've been a volunteer for a lot of different items. Yeah, I'm currently serving on the Bountiful Neighborhood Emergency Council. I do a lot of volunteerism with amateur radio, both civic and ecclesiastical volunteer work. Some of the organization for a lot of those amateur radio events that we'll support, like the Salt Lake City Marathon, the Wasatch 100, those type events, the handcart parade. I'll either participate or help organize those. So it's pretty fun. I like that aspect of it. What we're trying to do today was do a what's called a site survey. We're looking at to see if we can reach other nodes, other antennas in the valley. We have most of the cities within Davis County have a node that we can talk to over amateur radio frequencies. It's similar to Wi-Fi, but we can go a little bit higher power. Our goal with that is to establish intercommunications with the other cities in the case of if phone lines are down, internet is down, we can talk and send files and use phones with all those other cities and the county offices and the sheriff's office as well. We have a node on Antelope Island that we just found out that we can reach. You'll probably see a proposal from me a little bit later on about the equipment that we would need to establish that link that we could use through the radio room that we have established down in the basement. So I'm typically here every other week. We have a weekly check-in net with the whole county. We also have a Sunday night net with the city, the amateur radio people within the city, within each of your districts. I run that net and get communication from each of the district leaders in those areas. So we're in the know in case there is an emergency. I can talk to them from here or from my house or from the fire station. We have radios at each of those locations. So all of this is for is just to support you, to support the city in the event of emergency or any other event that we need, if we need that backup communication for you. So you'll see my name every once in a while. You'll probably see it on a proposal. My cohort in all of this is Rick Mead. He's up on the hill, so he can talk down to us a little bit. So, but I'll let him introduce himself.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you taking a few moments to let us address you with what we're doing. My name is Rick Mead. I also sit on the Bountiful Preparedness Council. I'm also a Bountiful CERT trainer. I am also the American Radio Relay League Utah Section Emergency Coordinator for the state. I recently took that position up. I'm also an official relay station for the National Traffic System. I pass messages on a daily basis. Through both CW, through voice, and through digital. I've got a digital node I run at my home that's tied into the digital national traffic system as well. That typically handles things like wellness traffic, so that when people are exiting from a location and they no longer have capacity to send either text messages or make phone calls with their cell phones, they can get that information to either the Salvation Army net or other locations to be able to pass that information out. I regularly check in when there's hurricanes on the East Coast, so that I can pick up wellness traffic, anything that's inbound, and then I can drop that into the national traffic system here on this side. So as Nick said, we've been working on establishing some additional connectivity. And again, part of what we're trying to do is making sure that we can support all the served agencies that are going to potentially need help with communications should there be an event of a disaster of some sort. We are not replacing them. What we are doing is augmenting and giving them time to do what they do well while we can help with some of the communication that goes on. So again, I thank you for your time and letting me just jump up here and say who I am, and appreciate all the help that we get from various metropolitan areas in order to be able to provide that support. Thank you.
Well, thanks for your work on our behalf. These guys do a great job on emergency preparedness, and you'll see them at the Liberty Fest Festival. We have 20 people or more helping us with Liberty Fest every year. So anyway,
I have to say, as a community member, it's very comforting to know that you are doing what you're doing. I had no idea that there were people that were trying to ensure that happened beyond just what happens at City Hall. So thank you.
Use your mic there.
Oh,
Sorry.
I was just going to get closer so I can
Well,
go to the mic here.
Yeah, I noticed that there's a new CERT class starting in September that South Davis Fire's doing, and Bountiful shared it. Is it something that our residents are also open to, and may I share it as that they can also sign up to take that class?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Matter of fact, that class, when I've got flyers that I'm going to be sending out in my neighborhood, because I'm also the block captain for Lilywood Lane, which is where I live.
Okay.
And I'll be sending that around this week for people to sign up and encouraging them to do that. But those classes in Bountiful, and I'll put a plug in right now, and this was actually stated by Assistant Chief Moss of the South Metro Davis Fire, that class that Bountiful offers in CERT is the best one in the state. And it's because of the kind of training that we do and the way we put the mock disaster together, which is done out at the shooting range for Bountiful Police. When we use the buses, we use all that stuff in order to take those people through. So we're currently set up to where we're handling a total of about 60 with a little flexibility there. We'll do the classes on Tuesday and Thursday. It's the same class offered on Tuesday as is offered on Thursday. So people can sign up for one or the other, and if they miss one, they can pick it up on the other side. But it's absolutely open to everybody in the county. That's not a problem. It's not just for Bountiful.
Okay.
Is there a cost associated, and how many sessions in the certification process?
The prices change a little bit. Basically, the cost of the course. And I'm going to give you what I think the number is, and I think it's $40. It went up from 35 to 40. But what that covers is the beginning of a CERT kit. So you get a backpack with that. You get some personal protective equipment along with that, N95 mask, gloves, and so forth, in order to do protection, a helmet, what have you, and some other equipment that are just basic for that. And it's really a starting point for your CERT kit. If anybody's ever interested, I can go out to my truck and show you mine, but it gets much more involved in that over time. But that's typically what the price is. The only thing that has changed this time through is that we used to also include one of the FEMA books for the CERT training. That is now unavailable, and if we got them printed, there would be like $35. So we're suggesting that people pick that up online. You can download it and just keep it on your own digital device and refer to it there. So that's what's happening with that one now. Any other questions I can answer? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. If we could get that publicized, that's available.
Yes. I will share that tonight.
Yeah, because I know a couple people I think might be interested in attending. So thank
Sign
you.
Sign up early before the classes fill. That's all I'll say. Fill up quick.
How often is it repeated?
We've been doing the class two times a year, in the fall and in the spring. There has been some discussion about adding some more, but it becomes a little bit challenging just from the logistics of equipment and supplies, because we go through a lot of medical supplies doing that, between gloves and bandages, triangle bandages, and what have you. And it also requires the involvement of the fire departments, because we actually have people put out fires in the CERT training. We actually have people do cribbing, where they're lifting very heavy objects in that training. And they also go through that when they do the mock disaster at the end of the course, as part of the final for going through that. But two times a year, and it's eight weeks. As I say, one class per week is what you do, but you can take it either on Tuesday and Thursday.
Uh-huh. And how many hours per night?
3 hours, basically. Three hours. From 6 to 9. Okay. And we try to keep that and hold that very close to time, because those people that are they're volunteering to be there,
right,
and we want to be very respectful of their time and not go over if at all possible.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Does anybody else have anything?
I have a selfish question. I'm wondering about the Wasatch 100. So my family runs that race. My brother has ran it. I think this is his 10th or 11th year. I can't remember.
I typically stay at Brighton.
Okay.
At that.
Yeah, so you're where everyone gets sick and everyone quits?
Yes. Well, we used to have a poster up there at Brighton. That's 75
right.
miles. Congratulations. You've just finished 3 marathons. One
yes.
more to go.
So I usually help my dad or my brother
at the drop?
Pace from Lambs Canyon to Brighton.
Okay.
So my question is this. Why does it take so long to get all the right times in? Because we're all sitting there waiting, trying to figure out when they're going to come in, and then all of a sudden, 5 hours later, they get posted. Answer that, please.
The data link that we use is, it's a data link that refreshes. We transmit that data as soon as we receive it. It probably takes a few minutes to transmit. That goes into a main computer, and then from that computer, it takes the information into a front side server that's web based. It's the connection between the data computer that we have that interfaces with the web based viewing of all that data, and it queries that data like at a half hour or 45 minutes.
Right.
So it's not current. We get it to it within 15 minutes, but it queries that data. It compiles and queries that data every 30 minutes to 40 minutes.
So all of you that are wondering what we're talking about, so they're up in the middle of the forest running, and we don't ever know when they're coming through because we're down in the normal world. And so these guys are transmitting times back and forth, but we're at home watching the time because it's a 100-mile race. I mean, it takes a day and a half for some people. So. Mm-hmm. You're trying to make sure that your loved one's alive. And so, yeah, you're our only hope of tracking.
So does it run up through the mountains?
Yeah, it starts in Kaysville
and goes
ends
up
in Heber.
Through Park City, Soldiers Hollow comes down through Brighton. All around there.
How many feet of vert is it over the 100 miles? Isn't it like 20 or 30,000?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 32 or something like that. It's mm-hmm. crazy. Yeah.
Yep, and it's up and down. It's not right. For the weak of heart, so
yeah.
Literally, it's not for the weak of heart.
It's one of the hardest trail races out there.
Yeah, it is. Ultra marathoners, they say it's one of the harder ones because of the altitude that it starts at and goes to and ends at. So,
well, thank you. I've honestly wondered that for years, and so when you said that, I'm like, I'm going to ask the question I've always asked. So thank you.
You're welcome to learn it firsthand. We can get you into a class for amateur radio.
Maybe I will.
And help with that.
Maybe I will.
Then you can.
Then I can't have to complain. I can just be the person that is doing it.
Even before your license, I do have openings for Brighton and some other locations. If you want to come up and see what happens. We go all night. We start 7 o'clock that night and go to the next morning.
That's usually my schedule when I run. I pick my dad up usually about 8 o'clock, and then we finish about 6 in the morning at Brighton.
Yep. So I'll be there in the morning. I'll be there at 2 a.m.
I'll come say hi.
Yep. Cool.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
A motion to adjourn. It doesn't need a second. It's just so being.
Okay. Wonderful. Yay. Thank you.
You did it. Good job, guys.
See you all next month.
Yeah, good to see you.